Okay, so next up we have Felix and Corvin talking about predictive maintenance using acoustics. So please.
Yeah, hi everyone. I'd like to start by saying a big thanks to all the organizers and volunteers at FOSDEM. Thanks for organizing everything. It's really great. As was mentioned in the introduction, we are doing predictive maintenance, and in our project we decided to focus on acoustic data. So we work for Deutsche Bahn, and you might know the trains, but actually, it's like a big company. They have lots of machinery everywhere, and maintenance costs should be reduced with modern techniques. So that's what we're trying to do. And today we talk about a specific use case, what we have the most experience with now, and that's escalators. So when we talk with people about predictive maintenance for escalators, everyone assumes, okay, it must be quite easy because they make these really loud noises, so you can maybe set some kind of threshold on how loud the machine noises are. But as you can see in this picture, there's actually like a lot of moving parts and many things can break. So we found out it's a bit more complex. So why is escalators an interesting machine? So I want to focus on that one point here. So if an escalator is broken, it can even lead to the situation that the train needs to be redirected if the fire escape is basically only available through the stairs. So it's like a really bad thing for our customers who are traveling, and we really want to avoid that. And we have a really high availability that we need to maintain. So it's really expensive if you use traditional maintenance methods. We found out, and so our customer wants to know how are the machines changing over weeks or months. But to actually get to the point where you can get some kind of trend or warn them that they should send the service technicians, we need to go down as far as milliseconds to actually understand what kind of different sound events are these machines making, and only then can we get back to the actual problem and aggregate over that to find a result over weeks or sometimes months. And this is what this talk is going to be about, how we first go on the millisecond level and then kind of get back to the actual problem.
Okay, so the next slide is just to emphasize on this problem we have. There are a lot of machine learning requirements from our customers, and in the end it all comes down to we have to model sounds which happen within milliseconds. For example, a squeak or a grind noise from the machine, it's like just a short burst of audio which we definitely want to detect, and then further aggregate to over longer time periods. So we are actually in the position to record the audio ourselves in the field. We use an edge device, which basically is a Raspberry Pi with microphone amplifiers, two of them, and very generic microphone. You can see on the picture, and the big white box is the LTE antenna. We want to have good connectivity even in Germany, and escalators sometimes are built in the underground, so we're using a huge antenna for that. Having this edge device, it's like a good thing and a bad thing at the same time. A good thing because we can actually control the data quality, a bad thing because we have to label the data ourselves, so no one will give us labeled data. And this brings me to our software stack. As you can see, we're using the good stuff, a lot of open source in there, which really nothing would be, or my daily work life wouldn't be possible without it. So a big shout out to all these great communities. And and it's at Deutsche Bahn, we run a lot of stuff on HWS. Now let's get back to the data part. As I said, we label the data ourselves. So we collect data in the field from escalators. And right now we have like about 3,000 or more annotated audio files. We defined 12 classes, of which three or four are actually classes which signal a fault in the escalator. As I said, squeak sounds or grind sounds. Everybody would probably agree that that's not very good if a machine makes these sounds. And the whole labeling was done in our team. And yeah, it's now we're going to have a look at the actual data. We start off with waveform. Waveform sampled at 22 kilohertz, which gives us, when we have 5 seconds, like 100,000 data points. That's quite a lot. And a common step in when you're doing machine learning on audio is to use the spectrogram instead of the raw audio data, simply because we all know machine learning on pictures works really nicely. Still, the data density is quite high if you just take a simple SDFT from the audio. That's why we also apply a MEL filter, which reduces the frequency representation of the spectrogram, and by roughly a half. And as a last step, we also apply log compression, which shows in some situations better results, but actually you could argue that it's something a convolutional layer would do by itself anyway. Okay, so this is the whole pre-processing step, but let's get back to the actual labeling. For this, we have an annotation tool, which is open source. You can find it on GitHub. The cool thing about this is you get the audio and the spectrogram at the same time. And that's really important because if you only have audio, you sometimes miss cues in the signal. And if you have this visual representation, it's quite easy to label the data. And the process of labeling, it's just a short video, looks something like this. You listen to it, and then you pull bounding boxes around the parts that you think belong to one class. And yeah, it's a good tool, but still we're listening to escalators, so that's really no fun. And you shouldn't do it more than like 2 hours. After that, your brain is just done for the day. Okay, so now we have labeled data. So let's have a look at our model design. We're going with a convolutional model and an LSTM layer as well. The model itself is inspired by instrument transcription, which is quite similar. If you imagine a piano track and you want to classify each note, it is at least similar to classifying a squeak in a spectrogram. Our model is like 4 million parameters and some other more technical points up there. As you can see, we use this convolutional part as a feature extraction. And by doing so, we don't reduce the time dimension. So if we are feeding 5 second examples, then after the feature extraction, we still have 5 seconds by the dimensionality of the filter. So this is then fed into the LSTM layer. We're using a bidirectional LSTM at that point, which then maps the feature maps to our 12 classes and is then run through a sigmoid activation. And if we look, and the LSTM as well doesn't do any aggregation in the time dimension, so we get an activation function over time for each class we want to model. And this is an example of the class Squeak. Over 5 seconds, okay, what can we do with this? Just a quick reminder, when we look at the spectrogram, which is also represented over 5 seconds, and simply put the activation on top, we can see, it seems to cut out some parts of the spectrogram. Now, for the moment, you have to believe me that these are actual squeaks, after that, we can simply apply a threshold to the activation function, and we get quite accurate boundaries around the squeak parts and can calculate how many seconds squeaks or grinds or other classes happened in the audio. Okay, let's listen to these nice squeaks. Okay. That worked. So, now we know how much our escalator squeaks, but what does it tell us about the health of the escalator? We don't really know, because a machine like this, it grinds, it squeaks from time to time, and it's probably okay, so we have to have a more a wider look into the data, and that's it's is where our time series analysis comes in.
When we reached that point and Corin told us, okay, we can listen to this audio snippet now and we see it's been squeaking for, say, 300 milliseconds, we thought, okay, that's a really huge step, so we can help our customer. So we let that model run on post-processing of data we had collected before, and we were really anxious to look at it, and so we plotted the different classes out and thought, okay, maybe we can immediately say which machines are broken, and so this is what we saw at first, thinking, okay, this is really noisy. If we look at all the audio snippets we collect during a day, we can't really say much here. Is this bad or is it good? We didn't exactly know. So we thought maybe we need to look at a bigger time frame. So we did that and we saw, okay, obviously here around the middle of that plot something is changing, but we couldn't exactly say, okay, this is what a threshold should look like, or this is when we should send an alarm. So we wanted to find a model that's post-processing that data, so to say, and gives us a possibility to automate this. And so here's an even bigger time frame, and what we looked before is now only like a small change. So we needed to find a solution for that aggregation problem. So we were looking at this in two dimensions. So on the one hand, we saw we have really much noise in the time domain, so to say. So we wanted some kind of smoothing and tried out all kind of different filters which will aggregate over different amounts of time. That's what you see when we go from the left to the right in that picture. But we also realized some failures have different symptoms. So a squeak might turn into more grinding noise if the broken part gets tilted even more or something. So we also wanted some kind of domain perspective aggregation. So if you go from the top to the bottom, you see what we call failure mode, which is our aggregation in the escalator use case over these different classes and how they interact. From then on, we've been focusing basically on looking at this picture in the bottom right. And we have different learnings. So for example, should you fuse those bad classes, or can it even be that they are rather orthogonal, or is one kind of canceling out the effect of the other one? That's something we needed to look at. So about the automation, the different shades of red in that picture are different aggregations over time. So we have seen, okay, if we look at this picture, there are some anomalous behaviors for hours, sometimes even for days, and sometimes also we have this kind of level shift where the machine fundamentally tried to change how it's behaving. So to kind of model these different things, we were doing different types of time series decomposition. So we have a really nice seasonality here. That's because in the night, those escalators are put either into sleep mode or turned off. So we could also extract some kind of trend, what you see in blue here on the top picture. And then we could have modeled like the residuals if you look at the mistake from that model to the actual time series. Here we said, okay, we put a threshold over it from that model, and then we look when the actual data would be over it. But in that case, as I mentioned, they're turning off the escalator in the night, but we didn't want to go into the trap that if they leave it on for one night and it's a little bit louder than usual, it might not be over the threshold. So we decided to build another model where we have a much smoother threshold function, which is still based on a seasonal decomposition, but over a longer period of time. Now we can see, okay, everything that's over that threshold is something we might be potentially interested to look into, but we didn't want to check every point because there might be a football match in town or something and the fans are making loud noises. So we kind of also needed a threshold over how many of those anomalous occurrences are over time. And when we thresholded that, we got this kind of alarming system, which we are applying now. And so as an example of this is actually working for us, we have another audio from that time series. So. Yeah, and so this actually worked for our customers. We could send them alarms. So far, we have a good, really good relationship now. And yeah, so that's it from that part. So a quick summary. We have that systems of system approach, and we really found it's necessary. It wasn't enough to just build a deep learning model. We also need to do some kind of analysis of the time series later on and potentially even get more parts into the system. The data quality and quantity were a huge part of getting everything to work. As Corbin mentioned, endless labeling sessions of the escalator data. Also data set variance. If you have those machines, they're different producers, but the customer might only have equipped one microphone from that producer. So to get more generalizability, we want to have bigger variance from machines. And next steps, we want to expand the data set further, maybe even to over 60 hours. And we want to start focusing on stuff like remaining useful life estimation. And to get there, we really need to build a database of those cases over a much longer period of time. Thanks for your attention. This wasn't done by only us, this presentation. We have our colleagues Fabian and Daniel here as well. And yeah, we hope you enjoyed. And if you have some questions, we're happy to, yeah.
Thank you, Felix and Corvin. Yeah, any questions?
Well, looking at your model, you're starting off with a bunch of features which you've designed into the system, and then you're trying to learn sub-features to determine these features. Yet you also have failure as a general sort of feature. Why didn't you, or did you try and abandon it try to train the system to actually learn features that lead to actually the true feature that you're looking at, the true thing you're looking, which is some form of failure modus. Squeaks is not a failure modus.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it is the first step. Like,
can you repeat the question, maybe? Can you repeat the question?
Ah, okay. Yeah, I think the question was why aren't we directly learning a class like failure mode to signal if an escalator is somehow faulty or broken, and instead use multiple classes which are kind of generic, I would say. But yeah, we're using a class like squeak and grind because you can quite easily establish a common ground about what is a squeak and what is a grind. Something like failure mode is quite abstract, so that is why we're going with these simple classes and aggregate them later on.
Thanks for the talk, it was very clear. I'm wondering, did you consider enriching your data with external